The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio. And I'm joined today by Big Blue View's Tony Del Genio as we look back at the just concluded New York Giants 2023 NFL Draft. Tony, how you doing today? Appreciate your time as always.
I'm doing great, Ed. I couldn't help it. Do great.
There you go. Those of you who are watching on YouTube see that I'm wearing a hat today. You might not be able to see it, but I meant to wear this hat. This is my Maryland Terrapins hat. I meant to wear this on Friday when we reviewed round one and forgot to do that. But I've got it on for you guys today. So, you know, and I'm wearing that since I'm a Maryland grad in honor of the Giants drafting Deontay Banks in round one. So had to make sure that I did that today, Tony.
Well, I'm guessing that you enjoyed that first round pick.
Well, of course. I always, it's always cool to have Maryland guys on the Giants roster. I think this is the first time, since I've been covering the Giants anyway, that I can recall them drafting a Maryland guy in round one. So it's kind of cool.
And I think, you know, there are a lot of Giants fans who might want to put on one of those Terps hats this weekend also.
There you go. I have a couple of other ones laying around the house too, but this is the best one. So, and besides which, you know, when I wear the red hat, my wife can find me in a crowd. So, although there is a quick story about this hat. I wore this hat to cover training camp a couple of times last year, and I happened to wear the hat on a day that I was scheduled to interview Dexter Lawrence. And Dexter, of course, took one look at the hat as he was walking up to greet me. He took one look at the hat and he told PR, he said, I can't talk to him. Not while he's wearing that hat. I can't talk to him. So Dexter's a lot bigger than I am, so I took the hat off.
Right. Yeah, you got to listen to what the man says.
there you go. So Tony, let's get into some draft talk here. Lots and lots of praise. We talk about NFL draft grades. Lots and lots of praise for Giants general manager Joe Shane, you know, from the national NFL draft media. And I think it's absolutely 100% deserved. There's no way to know. How any of these picks are going to pan out. There's no way to know if Deontay Banks is going to be an all-pro or if he's going to be a bust. The same with John Michael Schmitz or Jalen Hyatt or any of the other guys picked. But as we sit here today, for me, it's impossible not to look at this draft and think that the Giants did very, very well over the last few days.
Yeah, and I've been thinking of it not just in terms of the players the Giants drafted, but also how, you know, what it does to them in their ability to catch up with the rest of their division. And yeah, that's obviously, you know, you're looking for a Super Bowl, but the first order of business is being more competitive in your division than they were. Obviously they were competitive with Washington last year, but they weren't competitive at all with Philadelphia, and they were somewhat competitive with Dallas, but just, you know, not enough, not to the point where they can start beating Dallas on any kind of regular basis. And I feel that the Giants really did as good a job of meeting their needs while not reaching for players in order to do it as just about anybody in the league. And I looked at the drafts of the other three teams in the division. Obviously Philadelphia had two amazing first round picks in Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, but that team doesn't have a whole lot of weaknesses, but I'm not sure that they particularly strengthened areas where they are a little bit more susceptible than others. I didn't think Dallas had a particularly great draft. I didn't think Washington had a particularly great draft. And I thought the Giants did have a great draft. And so my gut feeling is that the Giants have moved up in their ability to compete with their division opponents.
I thought the same thing, Tony. In fact, I wrote about that in my Things I Think column on Sunday morning. One of the things that Joe Shane said at the very outset of the offseason was that there's a talent gap between the Giants and the Eagles and the Giants and the Kansas City Chiefs, whatever teams you would consider the top three or four teams in the NFL. The Giants had work to do to get there and compete, you know, on a talent level with those teams. And I look at where the Giants are now after the main part of the roster building season is over. And I look at it, and yes, the Eagles had an outstanding draft. They made two really good first round selections. They made the trade for DeAndre Swift, the running back, you know, from Detroit. But you can argue that what the Eagles did basically allowed them to tread water after some of the players who they lost in free agency during the offseason. So you can argue that perhaps they didn't get better. Being as good as they were in the draft allowed them not to take a step back. I think that for me, what the Giants did this offseason, it doesn't guarantee that they're going to go out and win 9 games again or 10 games or 11 games and make the playoffs again, because you just never know how the games are going to go. You never know who's going to get hurt. You never know when there's going to be a crazy bounce or an awful call that costs you a game or something along that line. But I think that when I look at the Giants, what they did in free agency, upgrading the defensive front seven, what they've done in the draft here, upgrading the speed and athleticism and adding a guy who could be, if he pans out the way people think in John Michael Schmitz, a guy who could be the anchor of that, the middle of that offensive line for a while. I think the Giants have taken a big step forward in terms of the talent and the depth across their roster. So I would argue that they have, to an extent, closed that talent gap. It's not a one-year process to get to where the Eagles are, but I would argue that this was a good step forward for the Giants.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not just in talent itself, but one of the things you mentioned was speed and athleticism. If you were wondering what Joe Shane and Brian Daboll feel is important in prospects that they go out and draft, speed and athleticism is it. Basically, just about every one of those guys they drafted, except for Jordan Riley, the nose tackle at the end of the seventh round, but every one of those guys they drafted has tremendous RAS, relative athletic score rankings. Deontay Banks was actually, I think, the highest RAS score of anyone in the last 37 years or something like that. You know, it's just amazing the the consistency with which they drafted guys that are extremely athletic. And that even went into their free agent signings, because they signed a free agent wide receiver, Bryce Ford Wheaton, who was a big guy, 6'4", 211 stuff, you know. And
you look at his chart and it's insane.
Yeah, he ran a 4.38 40.
In some of the mock drafts that I did, I was picking Bryce Ford Wheaton for the Giants on day three, mm-hmm. simply for the reason that I kept looking at the relative athletic score or the chart on mock draftable and saying, you know, this guy's at the top of almost every category when it comes to athleticism. You've got to take a flyer on this guy and see if you can tap into that.
Yeah. And that's also, I think, something that you have to keep in mind with the division opponents, because if you look at the division opponents, they all have very athletic skill players. I mean, obviously the Eagles, not only with Jalen Hurts, but with their wide receivers, are extremely athletic. The Cowboys too, with their wide receivers, and Dak is actually pretty athletic too. And even Washington, with Dotson and Curtis Samuel and so on, you know, have pretty athletic receivers. And so I think it's clear that there's a type that the Giants are looking for on the team. And that's one, not the only factor, obviously, but one of the factors that they must use to sift through prospects.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the value of the picks, and Warren Sharp of Sharp Football posted a couple of graphics on Sunday morning. One showing that based on where guys were expected to be selected in the draft, that every one of the Giants selections, with the exception maybe of 254, because I think his chart only went to 250, every single one of those picks was actually a value pick, because the Giants got that player later than he was anticipated to be drafted. In another chart that Sharp had posted, said that in terms of player value, probably again because of where the Giants were able to pick those players, the Giants got the best value out of any team in the league in this draft. So just another couple of analytical ways to look at what Joe Shane did and feel really good about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that really at every point, especially on days one and two, And even at the beginning of day three, when the Giants first picked in round five, I couldn't help but really smile at every single player that got picked and thought, wow, that's a great addition to the team. That's a really nice pick at this point of the draft, and so on and so forth. And I think that the majority of Giants fans, who could be a pretty critical bunch, I think, loved what the Giants did through most of those rounds.
Giants fans critical, Tony? Come on. You know, in 16 years of doing this, I never noticed that. You know,
well, I still see some of it on Twitter, people criticizing Shane. Well, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because people, I think, will find, you know, some people just have to criticize. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, some people have to find something to pick on, something to be unhappy about.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
You know, one of the things that I wrote this morning or Sunday morning at Big Blue View was that whether you're thrilled with the players that Joe Shane drafted or not, especially in the first three rounds, whether you're thrilled with those players or not, I think that you should be thrilled by the aggressiveness, by the bold go and get it decision-making that Joe Shane showed over the weekend. And some people at Big Blue View reading that column were not understanding or were disagreeing with what I'm trying to say. And I'm not necessarily talking about those picks. What I'm talking about is the fact that, to me, what it shows is that you have a bold, aggressive general manager who is willing to look at his convictions and willing to go get what he wants. He's not going to sit there and say, oh, we couldn't get that guy because I couldn't give up the fifth round pick to go move up and get that guy. We just weren't in place to do that. So we'll settle for second best. And for me, the reason why it's exciting for me is because it shows you that I think it bodes well for the future as the Giants try to build this team and try to catch the Eagles and try to catch the Chiefs and try to get to that talent level where they're considered, you know, an annual championship contender. You have a general manager who's not going to be afraid to take a risk if he thinks that risk could really help the Giants, you know, take a step forward.
Yeah, and I think that the idea behind all those things, well, first of all, who knows, but I don't think either he or Brian Daboll see the Giants contending for the Super Bowl this year. I still feel that there are more pieces that need to be added before you could make a serious run at a Super Bowl. But it does say that he's getting out on the runway and trying to get into position, I think probably to be able to do that by next year. And I think the thing that he and Brian Daboll realize is that you are not, especially in the NFL, you're not going to win a Super Bowl in today's NFL with a bunch of gritty, hardworking guys who don't have that much talent, but really play hard. And so, you know, that'll get you so far. And it got them to the playoffs and even to a playoff win last year. But these days, in order to win a Super Bowl, you need impact players. You need difference makers on both sides of the ball. And the Giants last year just, you know, didn't have many of those. They haven't had many of those for a while. Okay. Dexter Lawrence was a difference maker last year. Saquon Barkley was certainly a difference maker last year. You might add one or two others, but really that's kind of it for the team. And you need guys who can basically change games. And with these draft picks that they made, especially on days one and two, I think that's what he was trying to do. I think in Deontay Banks, he's looking for someone that he honestly thinks can be a shutdown corner in the NFL and take away the team's wide receiver one. That's a difference maker. With Jalen Hyatt, he's looking for someone who can not only be a home run hitter himself, but with the speed downfield can open up those middle levels of the field and make it easier for Mike Kafka to scheme other guys open at short and intermediate routes too. So again, people who affect how opposing defenses have to deal with you. And I think he realizes that until you add enough of those guys to the team, you can't legitimately think about winning a Super Bowl. And so you see the opportunity to grab players you think can be that. And you say, I'm willing to spend resources to do that.
Absolutely. It's funny that you went in that direction in that answer, Tony, because one of the things, you know, I get asked all the time leading up to the draft, what position you think the Giants should get after, should go after. What do they really need? And you could answer wide receiver, you could answer cornerback, you could answer whatever you wanted to answer. But for me, the real answer for that, the real thing that the Giants had to search for was, as you said, difference makers, game-changing players, guys who could do things. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau was a difference maker for the Giants last year, making strip sacks that turned into touchdowns. So the Giants just didn't have enough of that type of player. And for me, where do you get those types of players? You get those types of players in the first round and in general in the top 100 selections. You don't get those players in the sixth and seventh round. The Giants were in a different situation last year. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll came in and they had no idea what they had. They didn't think they had much talent. They wanted to collect as many players as possible. You know, Joe traded down a couple times. This year was different. This year, Joe was hunting difference makers. And I think that when I think about this, you know, Chris Flum did some great work for us with all the draft prospect profiles. I think there were more than 130 of them on the website leading up to the draft. When Chris graded the picks that the Giants made, when he put his grades together on Sunday morning, he dinged the selections of Hyatt and Banks just a little bit because of the capital that Joe Shane gave up. And I love you, Chris, but I strongly, strongly disagree with dinging those picks or with because of what Joe gave up to move up and make those picks. I'll just say a little bit more, Tony, and then I'll let you weigh in. I understand that some people shake their head at the idea that the Giants moved up one spot to get Deonte Banks. But look, if you're there, if you've got a list of, say, five players, and two of them might have been wide receivers who just came off the board, Deonte Banks is at the very top of that list. And you're going to be ticked off if you sit there at 24 and let somebody sneak up in front of you and grab Deonte Banks. Then you give up a resource to make sure that you get that player who's clearly at the top of your board. So I had no problem with that. And I also had no problem with moving up. They moved up 16 spots to get Jalin Hyatt. They gave up their fourth round pick. That is what they intended to give up. They wanted all along to, when they saw that Hyatt was going to be there, they were looking for somebody who would take that fourth round pick to allow them to go up and get Jalin Hyatt. And again, you don't get Jalin Hyatt, who's the guy at the top of their board screaming at them at the beginning of the third round that they have to have that guy. You don't get that guy without giving up that resource. And I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, so I generally agree with you on this, Ed. I think, you know, there's several different ways to look at those draft trades. The statistics say that you're better off in general trading down than trading up, because there's a lot more uncertainty in evaluating players, even at the level of NFL general managers, than any of us and probably any of them want to admit. And so, as they say, the more bites at the apple you have, the better your chances of finding good players. And for that reason, you're better off adding picks, adding players, rather than denying yourself players by trading picks away. So if you could make these trades 100 times, then I think the statistics show that over 100 times you win more often than you lose by trading down, and you lose more often than you win by trading up. But of course, we're not doing it 100 times. We're doing it one time or two times, right? And so out of those 100 times, if by trading up you win 45% of the time and lose 55% of the time. Well, that means there's still 45 times that you won by doing that, right? And so you have to figure out, is this one of the times that I think it's worth doing? If you just look at trading pick number, moving up from 89 to 73 and giving up pick number 128 to do it, actually, if you look at these various trade shark calculators, that particular move, the one they made in the third round, was not weighed in or against or for or against them. It was a fairly even exchange of picks, because once you get to that part of the draft on day two, the value of picks kind of starts to flatten out, and so you're not making as bad a deal to move up 16 picks as you think you are. And so that one, I think I was okay with from the start. But the other thing you have to think about, and I think this is one way to look at what he did, or I say what he did, but really what was done in the third round apparently was Brian Daboll's doing. I gather that Brian Daboll was the one who was chatting with Sean McVay and getting the idea to make a trade, and Joe let him run with it. I gather that he had something to do with it. So good job, Dave's, right? But anyway, in the case of Jalen Hyatt, here's the question that I think have to ask in evaluating that particular trade. Is Jalen Hyatt the 73rd best player in that draft? Well, on big boards, he was number 39. On consensus big boards, he was about number 39. And so somebody was wrong there. And you could argue that, well, NFL general managers know more than anybody out there who's establishing a mock draft board. And they're all passing on Jalen Hyatt halfway through the third round, and so maybe they know something that the rest of us outside the NFL don't know about Jalen Hyatt's limitations and so on, or they weigh them differently. What we do know about his limitations, like his limited root tree and stuff like that. And so that's going to be the question going forward: is Jalen Hyatt going to turn out to be a player who plays like a 73 pick, or is he going to turn out to be a player who plays like a 39 pick? If he plays like a 39 pick, then that trade was a tremendous value for the Giants. If he plays like a 73 pick, it was still, I think, a good move, and they gave up as much as they got in doing it. So although that was a big jump, 16 picks, I didn't think that was a bad one at all. The Deonte Banks situation, again, you know, it's a situation where I think you realize when you're making that trade that you're giving up too much to do it. And you go ahead and do it anyway for precisely the reason that you said. You move up one slot because it's the difference between getting the player you want and not getting the player you want. Okay, and the Giants know about that. Every time they see Devontae Smith line up against them, that one pick in the one slot in the draft can mean a lot when somebody else makes the move and you don't. So if they really had Deonte Banks significantly higher than Joey Porter Jr., whom they could have had in that slot, then sure, you have to go get it. And a fifth and a seventh round pick isn't necessarily a tremendous price to pay, especially this year where apparently Daniel Jeremiah was being told by NFL general managers that the draft kind of disappears in terms of high value players once you get through day two, this year anyway.
Tony, the last thing I'll say about the trading up and trading down before we move on to a couple of other topics is that if you read the Big Blue View rules for draft success, they do say generally the idea is move down. Move down, collect picks, but move down and collect picks to be able to do exactly what Joe Shane did this weekend or over the weekend, which was go and get some guys when you have that capital available to you. So I thought in this particular case, I thought that Joe was perfectly justified in doing what he did. Anyway, I want to move on. I want to talk a little bit about day three, what the Giants did, and then talk a little bit about maybe what they haven't gotten done this offseason as well. So let's talk about day three. Again, the Giants focused a lot on athleticism. They got a backup running back for Saquon Barkley. They got the big run-stuffing defensive tackle in Jordan Riley, a guy that nobody other than Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan seemed to have a scouting report on. They added a couple of defensive backs as well. Do you have a favorite day three pick, and what did you think of what the Giants managed to do on Saturday?
Okay, so first of all, I really liked the Eric Gray pick. I thought that the Giants needed to add a running back in this draft. I would have liked to see them add a quarterback also, but there was a tremendous run on the second tier of quarterbacks. Once you I think in round three it began, if I remember correctly, and by the time you were through a lot of round four, a lot of those second tier quarterbacks were already gone much earlier than I expected them to. So it became clear to me pretty early the Giants weren't going to draft a backup quarterback, but I did think they should draft a running back. And Eric Gray was one of the backs that I mentioned in a piece that I wrote about a running back that they could draft. And the thing about Eric Gray is that I heard him described as not being fast, not being explosive. Well, I mean, he's not the fastest back that was in that draft. I'll say that, but he is far from slow. He does not have the type of speed that he's going to take at 50, 60 yards downfield without a defensive back catching up to him from behind. But he's someone who explodes through the hole and accelerates really quickly. And I just did not get the impressions of people who said that he doesn't have the explosiveness. He is great at getting through that hole after he makes his first cut. And he's really pretty elusive. And so I think he's a back who can make significant plays for the Giants in a backup role. So I really like that pick. He also is someone, I gather, who could be a punt returner. And as we know from last year, you know, the Giants, I think, need to find some answers at punt return. And I don't want to see a Dory Jackson back there anymore doing it. And so having your backup running back doing it would be a great thing if he's the guy who can do it. That's my first reaction, was that I really liked that pick. The three other picks they made, I will admit, are players that I knew nothing about. I like that they are making more picks for the secondary, because I think you can never have too much depth in the secondary. They're going for guys with height, I believe, in the guy Trey Hawkins the third. Mm-hmm. I think he's like 6'1" or something like that. And and then the guy they drafted, Les Javarius Owens, is that
Owens,
right? Mm-hmm. Is somebody I think who has potential to give them depth at safety, maybe, as well as cornerback. And I gather, you know, some people thought that Owens was a draftable defensive back, like round five or six or something like that. I think that may have been, I'm not sure whether that was Dane Brugler's.
I think it was.
Yeah.
I think it was Brugler's guide.
Mm-hmm. So not having known anything about any of those players except Eric Gray coming into the draft, I'm pleased overall at the particular guys they did take. I knew nothing about Jordan Riley either, but what little I know about him, he's 338 pounds, and apparently he's very very good against the run. And so as somebody to come in and give a breather to Leonard Williams or Dexter Lawrence for early downs and do that type of thing, I think that's potentially a nice pick. The only thing I will say against the other day three picks is that I was really hoping that they would draft someone who could be a good rotational player at edge defender, and they didn't do that. And I was hoping they'd draft a second linebacker, because I still feel that they have big question marks at the second linebacker spot. And they didn't do any of those with their draft picks, but they did draft players at both of those positions. They did, sign or are rumored to be signing players at both of those positions from the undrafted free agent pool. And so, maybe they'll find someone there who can help them out. But, Rome wasn't built in a day, and they managed to fill a lot of needs, plug a lot of holes while not reaching for players. And so I think those are very minor quibbles about day three for them.
Absolutely. I think that it became pretty clear when they gave up the day three assets that they gave up. They gave away a fifth round pick, one of the two fifth round picks, one of the three seventh round picks. They gave away their fourth round pick. It became pretty clear that there were a couple of areas that you might like to see them address, that they weren't going to be able to add some competition in every area that you might like to see. I pretty much knew that they would skip drafting a quarterback, once they traded so many picks. You would love to see them. And they still, Tommy DeVito, who they apparently have signed, for rookie camp, I don't think they're counting on him for anything other than helping them get through rookie camp and maybe helping them get through training camp. You would think they'll have to go out and find a low-level veteran, an experienced, number three quarterback, at least to have on the practice squad, somebody that's got some NFL snaps. Would have been nice to see them add more depth at edge. It would have been nice to see them grab a second linebacker. Would have been nice to see them add a tight end in what was a deeper tight end class. But, in some areas, I think that Giants fans can't forget about the fact that there were a lot of guys drafted last year by Joe Shane who never played for the simple reason that they were hurt. Wandale Robinson's the big name that everybody remembers, but Darian Beavers was headed toward being a starting inside linebacker. You can argue that, they should have drafted, someone other than John Michael Schmitz to as guard depth. But Marcus McKethan's a guy they drafted last year and that they like, who missed the year with a torn ACL. So they have some young players from last year's draft coming back. So it's almost like having a few extra draft picks as well, in a way. So some of the answers might be there. Some of them might not. As you said, Rome's not built in a day. But I think the Giants have made progress toward filling some of the holes that they had in this roster. And right now, I think, is a time for Giants fans to feel pretty good about the offseason overall.
Yeah, and the other thing that I always have to remind myself is that how players perform as rookies is not necessarily how they perform over their entire career. And so you can't give up on a player like Micah McFadden yet, even though when he played last year, he looked like he just wasn't ready yet to be in there. Maybe with another offseason, another training camp, all of a sudden he starts to improve in some of the areas that he was deficient last year, and he becomes a useful player. As you mentioned, Darian Beavers, who never got a chance, who was looking good in training camp, but never got a chance. And so, there are players who might improve from year one to year two. Certainly the Giants are hoping that Evan Neal improves from year one to year two. I think most of us are just about expecting that to be the case. And it happens with players that don't show you everything that's possible for them in one season, and you have to give them time. And so, there are ways the Giants can piece things together this year. I had no problem with them going John Michael Schmitz at number 57. I mean, I think the writing was on the wall once Joe Tippmann went off the board at number 43. It was kind of nervous time for Giants fans who wanted a center. We had to come out of this draft with a center, and you might as well come out with a good one. And Schmitz on many boards was the number one center. On some other boards, he was the number two center behind Tippmann. I think you like Tippmann better, but to get one of those two guys and to be able to take him at 57, I thought was exactly the right move. You know, now if you look at the Giants offensive line, they've got two number one picks and a number and a second round pick, two first round picks and a second round pick on their starting offensive line, presumably for 2023. So it's getting there. And then they've got third and fourth round picks vying for a guard spot and so on. So I think the offensive line is getting there. You'd always like to see more people on the offensive line.
Absolutely.
But I think they've made progress there.
Yeah. It's interesting. Dan Hatman of the Scouting Academy always tells me when it comes to the offensive line, you need three studs. Doesn't matter what positions they play, but you need three studs and you need two adequate players at the other two spots. And if you can get to that point, you've got a really good offensive line. If the Giants are right about John Michael Schmitz, and if they were right about Evan Neal, and he'll show us a lot about whether they were or not. He'll show us a lot in 2023 because I expect him to play better. It's a matter of how much better. Does he look like a long-term answer at right tackle? If he is, and if John Michael Schmitz is what the Giants think he is and draft analysts think he is, then guess what? Then the Giants have their three studs. And then they can then you fill in at guard with, you know, the best you can with your Ben Bredesens and Josh Azudus and whatever else you can. And then you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. And long term, that's going to be, I think, a key thing for the Giants' success in their division, because it's pretty obvious that the Philadelphia Eagles are not holding back when it comes to building up their defensive line.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, and the Dallas Cowboys have been strong on the defensive line for years also, and the Commanders too have been good on the defensive line. So all three of those division opponents, that's six games a year against teams who are good on the DL. And so I think the Giants have taken steps to compete better against those lines. We'll just see how much better starting this year, but obviously the offensive line is an area that I think they're going to have to try to make additions to really kind of every year for a while until they get to the point where they really feel that they can go toe to toe with those other division opponents.
Absolutely. Tony, I think that's a good place for us to call it a day. Giants fans, please remember, like, share, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts across the Big Blue View Radio Network. All right, please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.